Good morning. The Senate Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Monday, March 8th, 2021. The time is 9 o'clock. We're meeting in the State Capitol Room, number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Hughes, Senator Begich, and myself, Chair Senator Holland. We have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Jeannie, our recording secretary, and Kelsey, our LIO moderator today. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. So today we will hear two bills sponsored by Senator Stevens. My intent was to have the sponsor introduce these bills and set them aside for further work. In the absence of Senator Stevens, we will invite Mr. Tim Lampkin. Mr. Lampkin, if you would begin the presentation for Senate Bill 32 relating to college credit for high school students, and put yourself on the record and start with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. We'd like to express our gratitude for hearing this bill. Senator Stevens should be along here shortly. So this is a bill informally referred to as the Middle Colleges Bill. It's something that most of you are likely to be acquainted with. It was active last spring. But like many bills, as you know, it was kind of and a lot of good progress was being made on it. But unfortunately, because of the contagion, it was left to dry on the vine, so to speak, as well as with a number of other bills. But in summary, and as a refresher on this subject matter, the data is out there that showing that middle colleges and dual credit type programs significantly improve student success in both high school graduation rates as well as entering, or at least entering, some manner of post-secondary education. Well, there's different models out there. You'll hear different vernacular used to include middle colleges, where you say physically go to a campus versus say early college high schools, where the university would come to the high school classroom. Then of course there's the e-campus, virtual campuses, and then hybrids and combinations. And I think what this bill tries to capture is the hybrid combination model. This bill is not intended to micromanage. The university and school districts, as it indicates in there, that there shall be an agreement, but that that's consistent with individual needs at a district level, their interest level, their capabilities, and so forth. And so that we just want to set up a framework that this would exist, and that there be an understanding and agreement between the university and the respective district figure out and the details as to how what's going to fit for them. So we want to avoid a one-size-fits-all. We've negotiated some changes last year that in the Finance Committee that made for a better fit for us. And the goal here is to scale this up, because there are some districts, as you're going to hear here shortly, that are doing this with success, and we just want to scale that out to make it more readily available and fit other school districts, particularly those in the rural state. With that, I might go into the sectional, if it pleases you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. That'll be fine.
So in Section 1, and just to clarify, you should have in front of you Version A. It regards an annual report to the legislature by the State Board of Education and Early Development, amending that section that's been on the books for quite some time. But it would amend it to include a summary of current middle college activity around the state. Section 2 is the real core of the bill. It's what sets up this program, middle college program, and provides that framework that I led off with. So 143780, this is all new language. It would create the program. It would specify eligible students being able to enroll at the University of Alaska to earn credit towards a college degree. Subsection B there is the key language, that the university shall enter into agreements with each school district to participate in the programs for those students eligible. C would then provide some eligibility parameters, that students have completed, that they be in at least ninth grade up to 12th, that they haven't already gotten a diploma, and they demonstrate to the satisfaction of both the school district and the university that they have the academic competencies to to participate and complete college level work. D is a promotional area requiring school districts to establish and maintain awareness for students and parents. E touches on financing, again, such that the university and a respective school district will determine how to pay for the cost associated with the program, trying to minimize any burden on the students as well as to avoid any unintended consequences that might be suffered by a school district. Subsection F refers to course quality to make sure that there's content standards being observed, quality instruction, and instructor review, consistent with accreditation. G is a component about credit caps. We wanted to put a limit on this so that there'd be up to 60 credits, which is the equivalent of an associate's degree. Also to avoid having students maybe overly burdened with more than 15 credit hours. As you may recall, 12 credit hours is a full-time university student. I don't know about you, but having more than 15 or even 18 credits is a bit of a load. H is regards the hold harmless for the average daily membership of students participating in the program so that school districts don't lose that money. I is in regard to transcripts between the university and the school district so that they can share that information to help make them eligibility decisions. J goes into definitions, which are consistent with other areas of the statute. And then finally, section 3 regards the duties and powers of the University of Alaska Board of Regents and specifies that the university will participate and implement the middle college program. That concludes the sectional, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Question from Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tim, we had a long discussion last time about the costs of the bill, and you referred to it in Section 2D, E, financing, Section 2E, financing. You know, and part of the concern last year, and again, I'm really asking that you were kind of maybe remind us of that conversation, but part of the concern last year was the cost to the districts. Part of the concern was the cost to the individual student potentially because it could become a barrier so only certain students could take advantage of this program. I know that Oklahoma's is free. In your backup documents, it shows that. And it also, Michigan devotes some millions of dollars, and in Indiana, the students are covered. What were the discussions? Can you remind us of the discussions last year as to how we ensure that this is open equitably to students regardless of their income status and ensure that it also isn't adversely affecting the school districts themselves? I mean, the school district will still get ADM for these students, so what's the plan?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, thank you for that question. Every district is going to be different. There are some MOUs out there. I didn't yet include them in the packet as they're probably dated at this point. But I would like to share those with you that will give those details quite well. In the meantime, I guess I should appropriately defer to the districts that are online to step up here in a moment to go into those details for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
One little question.
Question from Senator Bachicki.
So what if there is a student that is capable of more than the 60 credit total? If they start in ninth grade and happen to be one of those kids, some kids are capable of more. Are they actually, they're just limited in the program. They're not, of course, limited if they want to pay for additional coursework on their own, or they would have the same credits. It just wouldn't be a part of the program. Is that right?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, that's correct. We've thought about that quite a bit, and there has been some interest in removing that cap. That's there based on the research that I'd conducted prior years on this subject. There is a counterbalance here that if we do lift that, then it's possible, however, maybe not likely, but certainly possible, that a student graduating from high school could potentially walk out of high school with a baccalaureate degree essentially for free. There wouldn't be necessarily tuition or all of the other expenses associated with attending university. Whether or not that's desirable is a matter of policy.
Mr. Chairman.
follow-up from Senator Machicki?
Yeah, I was actually thinking more of the funding would be capped at 60 credits. I think that's reasonable, but the credits could go both ways up above that, where it wouldn't have the cost to the district, but if a child, a young person, you wouldn't call someone who's willing to earn more than, 60 credits in high school, probably a child, but a young person that is at that level, seems like we would allow them to go further if they were capable. It's admittedly a small subset of those that are going to participate in the program, but those kids are there. Maybe we can wait and hear the testimony from the others, and I'm sure they know a few of those, and they might know how it works. I'm getting a thumbs up.
Through the chair, Senator.
Do you have a response?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki. That's a very interesting observation. Nothing would preclude students in this from taking courses above and beyond what this cap here, other than that this just would put some parameters, some sidebars on the middle college program. What they might do beyond that is certainly an option, but it would be outside of middle colleges.
Question from Senator Hughes.
Well, and I look forward to hearing from the superintendents and follow up to what Senator Machicki was discussing. Is my understanding that it's actually a savings to at least some of the school districts for the students to take the coursework through the middle college program, that the tuition that the district pays, it actually can be a net savings. And so that's a positive. But my question is in regard to, I think I saw it in the sponsor statement, the districts were required to participate, and then I know in the university it requires them to set up MOUs with the districts. What in the case of a very small district where there are a few high school students but none of them are interested, how can the district then participate? It's just simply to fill out the paperwork of the university and offer it, notify parents. Is that equate to them participating even if students don't enroll?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, thank you for that question. The framework of the bill isn't intended to micromanage. If indeed a particular district, let me back up. First of all, it says that there shall be an agreement, but that agreement could be that there will not be an agreement, that there will not be the middle college for the particular district that may decide after collaboration or discussion amongst parents and students and school leaders and so forth, they may decide that this doesn't fit, this doesn't really work for us, our circumstances. Thanks, but no thanks.
And a follow-up? Well, actually, it's not a follow-up. It's a new question, if that's okay, Mr.
Separate
Chair.
Separate question from
Yeah, separate question. On page 3 of the bill, and I think it maybe is mentioned somewhere else on line 25-26, it talks about national standards. So are these national standards that are specific to middle college, and is there some organization that puts those out? I'm just wondering what national standards are out there.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, that's some language that we negotiated with the university in respect to accreditation, that if they're involved with teaching courses, that they want to make sure that those courses are accredited and aligned with national standards. And they're going to be speaking to that as well here shortly.
Okay, I look forward to them because I want to know if it's just the regular university standards or if this is specific to middle college standards. Thank you.
And Mr. Lampkin, if you just speak a little bit, I see that they can pursue a college degree or certificate. And so is that a professional certificate or a career vocational?
That's spot on, Mr. Chairman. That's correct. It's to provide some flexibility, again, trying to give as much flexibility in this as possible, that it not necessarily be just degree seeking in arts or literature or math or science, that it could as well be towards, say, carpentry or welding and so forth.
All right. With no other questions before the committee, I see we have several people waiting online. Mr. Lampkin, are you aware? Are any of the superintendents or the vice president prepared to speak on this? Let's see. I guess we'll move to, I have them in this order on the list here. Dr. Paul Lair, Vice President, with, I guess, with UA. And if you'd place yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you. I'm getting an echo.
You're loud and clear on our end. Usually you hit a button on your end and it works.
I will try this. Can you hear me now as well?
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit. Try it.
To see if I could echo. Okay. Thank you very much. For the record, Paul Lehr, Vice President for Academic Students and Research at the University of Alaska. Thank you very much for an opportunity to be here to speak to SB 32. Got to get my right document up here. Excuse me for a moment. This would provide Alaska, the Middle College Program for Alaska students. As you know, dual enrollment provides a great opportunity for students to earn college credit while meeting high school graduation requirements. These types of programs have been around for quite a while and with a lot of different approaches. The university has partnerships with many of the districts across the state right now, and you'll hear from a couple of those districts here in a moment. And they've been very successful programs for both the districts and us, as well as for the students. And the students are the ones that are benefiting from this. The first middle college program that we had was with the Mat-Su district, and that has, I think, something like 130 or plus students in it. We also have programs with the Anchor School district with over 280 students in it this year, which is increasing every year. This year, we created a new program with the Fairbanks North Star School District, which was capped at 40, but has a wait list of over 100 students who want to participate in that program, and we're looking at expanding that. In addition to those very classic kind of on-campus programs, we have created what we have called a virtual middle college called the Alaska Advantage with the University of Alaska Fairbanks, where we can provide the middle college experience, college-level classes, for students across the state. So they don't need to be in a place where there is a university campus. They can be anywhere in the state and any district and have students enrolled in those University of Alaska courses. So for us, that has been a way to expand to over 30 districts now, as well as homeschool students to participate in those programs. Of course, students are free to come on to our universities or take classes. We're an open enrollment university, and so students can take those classes if they meet prerequisites. But these programs through the districts have been a great benefit for students. They make it affordable to attend the university. They get dual credit for the university, and they've been quite successful. As Mr. Lampkin mentioned in his opening remarks, we have a lot of models. There are lots of students out there with different situations, a lot of districts with different situations in terms of their access and ability to work with the university. And so we have developed models that are tailored to each district, whether they're in person or virtual or hybrid. And what we want to ensure as we move forward with growing these programs, and it's our intent to grow these programs, that we don't limit ourselves to any particular model. Really, the flexibility is what has made our programs grow. The ability to focus on specific targets. We have programs which are cohort-based, looking at preparing teachers to come into the university from high school, starting to talk to them about that. Also in the areas of health and other areas are growing as well. So we can look at focusing on specific areas. Engineering is another one where we take a look at thinking about building cohorts of students to succeed in those areas. So for us, the growth of these dual enrollment programs, which is the term that we use as we look at these students coming into our programs, has been a boon for the university. You know, statistics show that many of these people who graduate from high schools and have taken advantage of Alaska Middle College come to UA. And for us, that is obviously a success. They want to finish their degree, their associate's degree that they started perhaps, or their certificate, or move on to a baccalaureate program. And for us, that is really the plus. It keeps them here. It keeps them engaged with the university. It keeps these students in the state. in programs that will be successful. So with that, I thank you very much for the ability to make some comments about this bill, and would be happy to answer questions.
Also, I'd like to apologize to Senator Stevens. I failed to recognize him when he joined the meeting quite some time ago. Question from Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize. I had another commitment and couldn't get here on time, but always trust my staff because they've done a great job with this bill. This is the second year we've dealt with this, and I really appreciate Dr. Laird, Paul Laird, and his efforts as he supported this. And I think he's struck on a very important thing. You know, this is a win-win for the state of Alaska, this bill. Not only does it offer tremendous advantages to our children who are in high school and to our school districts, but I think it is also, as Dr. Laird just mentioned, very important for the University of Alaska. As you know, the university has had its budget cut seriously. The truth of the matter is, statistically, that students who start taking classes when they're in high school at the University of Alaska continue with the university and getting their degrees there. So I think it's a win-win. We are responsible, of course, for K-12, but also for the University of Alaska. So I really appreciate Dr. Laird's support for this over the years. I really have no question of him, but I just want to make sure that everyone is aware that this is advantageous not only for our children, but also for the University of Alaska.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Question from Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you very much for being here, and I'm been watching this program, and I know it's a good thing. So I have a little bit of my heart in Fairbanks because I lived in Fort Yukon in Fairbanks many years ago, and I was kind of concerned when I heard how many on the wait list, 140 in the current program, and I'm glad they're working to expand it. But then you went on to mention that a student could go on campus or be part of the virtual middle school. If there's any way or if there'd be interest to do it in this bill, but is there a way for a student, if they're on a wait list at a district and don't get in, could go through the virtual middle college, or does the district have to agree to have them be, because the district's paying for it, right? So I'm just wondering, I feel for those 100 kids that wanted to be in the program and can't be. And that could happen in other places as this catches on. Do we have a remedy to that, or are the districts going to just have to increase their cap to make it work?
I'm going to thank you very much through the chair, Senator Hughes. I will have to defer a bit to our superintendents regarding some of the agreements and how we are dealing with students who want to participate, but we just don't have room at this point in time. The different programs, the virtual middle college, is a little bit different in that it's more of a partnership with the individual school districts, and that they supply a lot of the logistical support. So it's not simply that they're on our classes and treated, you know, and kind of mainstream with our university students, but rather there is a partnership where the districts also provide some of the mentoring and supervision and proctoring and all of these kinds of things as well. So it's the different models have a little bit different implementations, but and again, I would have to look at the agreements that we have with the Fairbanks district or the Anchorage district to see whether alternate pathways are available for those students. Through the chair, if I may ask, clarify a couple of other points that I wanted to make.
Yes, Dr. Laird, just feel free. Go ahead.
Okay. Back to Senator Hughes's question about standards. What the purpose of the program and our courses are is that the students in those programs are taking the exact same classes that a university student takes. So those courses, if they're taking a writing class, for example, introductory writing, it is University of Alaska Anchorage Writing 111. It is not a special class for students in high school. It is that class, and it meets those standards that program must meet for our institutional accreditation. It is not, there's no asterisks on the transcript. There is nothing that says that this was taken at a high school. It is a university class when it appears on their academic transcript. So we hold the instructors, if it's a university instructor, whether it's a full-time faculty or an adjunct, to high standards to be able to deliver that learning to that student. If it's a somebody in a high school, if a high school teacher is approved to teach the class, they must meet those standards as well through various kinds of programs. So the point being that the student is in university, and parents and students have to realize that if they get a B in that class, writing 111, that's a university grade that will stay on their transcript. So there is a requirement, a responsibility that the students must bear and understand when they're going to take this program. So it may not be for everybody, but it does provide that kind of access as we go forward. So again, no matter how the course is delivered, whether it's online, in person, hybrid, taught by a teacher in the school, taught by an adjunct, taught by a professor, all those same classes, all writing 111, will have the same learning outcome expectations. There's no difference whether they take it on the Anchorage campus or online, same thing. And I really wanted to emphasize that because there is this idea that this somehow is a different course for high school students. It is not. It is university level, GER, occupational classes, vocational classes, whatever that class is, there's no difference. Thank you.
Are there any other questions for the committee? Seeing none, what we'll do at this point, thank you, Dr. Lair, for your comments. We'll move
thank
on
you.
To Dr. Dina Bishop, Superintendent, Anchorage School District. Dr. Bishop, if you'd like to place yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you. My name is Dina Bishop, the Superintendent of the Anchorage School District. I appreciate you allowing me to testify, Chair Holland. Can I be heard okay?
We're hearing you loud and clear.
Great. So thank you. I'm here to speak about the Alaska Middle College School, or what we call AMCS. In Anchorage, the school began in the school year 2017 and 18. We are presently in our fourth year with over 280 students. Truly, the Alaska Middle College is an opportunity for students and families in our state to utilize our BSA funding model to support the cost of college and high school education simultaneously. To tell you the truth, back in 2012, when I worked in the Matsuburo School District, we began it, and the main goal was for students to be college ready. There was an outcry really from the university at that time that kids may not be college ready yet. And so we wanted to begin a middle college program, looked around many different states. As was already previously said, there's many different models. We chose a place-based model, which is on campus. And not only for the students to have access, but also that I could go in there as an educator, as a scout and spy, to figure out what it is about college that makes students ready or not. Is it strictly the content and the academics, or those other soft skills? But anyway, here students show interest. They take either the ALEKS or ACCUPLACER or have an SAT, ACT, but they must score with a level of competency so that they can enter a credit-bearing course to start. We're letting the college know we will prepare them to be college ready, that they don't need remediation. So if kids aren't quite there yet, we work with them in our side of the program, which is the high school side of the middle college, in order to pass those exams, those entrance exams. Some students get in the math science area because they scored high on the ALEKS, and some students get in on the language side but have to take the math still with us, some tutoring to be able to pass that entry exam. The middle college makes it possible for, again, our juniors and seniors to complete their high school graduation requirements while simultaneously earning the University of Alaska college credits. With proper planning, AMC students have the potential to earn an Associate's of Arts degree at the same time they earn high school, or they can simply work for their general education requirements, or as Dr. Lair said, it's the GERs. That can go towards a BA or BS. It's the first 2 years. I would say that the mean of all of our students over the 8 years that I've been in the program, I've taken a look at the data, and kids earn about 48 college credits by the time they leave, so they're a year and a half into college. We have had students over 66 credits, and so we have allowed students at our cost to be able to take additional courses. In fact, I'm going to share one of our biggest success stories was a student at an East High School. She had already taken some AP courses, which is advanced placement, where she took the tests. UAA accepted the credit, and she graduated in 2019 from our school district with a Bachelor of Science in Mathematics with her high school diploma. She was, like, amazing. So there are kids out there like that, and we simply just work with them one-on-one. But 100% of the courses at UAA, just so you know, have been transferable not only to a later degree at UAA, but students that have left the program and chosen a college in another state or a different college in Alaska, all credits have transferred. So the UAA program is a very, very strong program for those general education requirements. But the beauty of it is that over the last 4 years here in Anchorage, 72 to 78% of students on any given year have stayed with the UA system. So they'll choose UAA, UAS, and UAF as their primary schools. That's a demonstration to the quality of the program. Our program just gets them there, but they stay because of the quality education they're getting at university. What was said already is that this is just another form of dual credit. I mentioned the gal from East got an AP course, College Board credits. We have International Baccalaureate where they can earn college credits. The Alaska Pacific University has their early honors. We offer tech prep courses, which are CTE courses that have dual credit. Project Lead the Way is engineering with the engineering school at UAA, which is also offers dual credit. And a lot of our homeschool correspondence programs, they offer online courses to the university as well. AMCS is just different because it has the power of the place. And of course, it's a partnership of two sides, the college side at the secondary host, as well as the post-secondary institution. And it includes both UAA staff and our staff. Students, though, who go to UAA classes are in UAA classes. They could be in classes with students from that just go to UAA. So they're not cohorted at this point into our classes for the general education requirements. They just sign up for a university course and they're on their way. Some of the feedback that we've received just from students over the years is we collected this during the midterm gathering this year, and they feel that the best features of AMCS are increased sense of independence and responsibility, as well as flexibility for their schedules. They love the ability to get ahead in college, and they reported one of their best resources were the ASD teachers on our end that really serve as that additional support. Their most challenging classes were, as we expected, in math, but they were aware of the multitude of resources available on the campus. And so that entry level to get the feelers out there really assists them. Parents shared with us that they feel the best feature is the college environment, and their kids are really engaged in their coursework, and they have the opportunity to get ahead while fulfilling college. 50% and a little over, sometimes it's 51, sometimes it's up to almost 60% of our students in the Alaska Middle College are first-time college students, college goers. So that support really assists with that cultural capital knowledge about how university works, and we're very, very proud of that. The ANSEP program is part of our middle college that students in their 11th and 12th grade year can come to AMCS, and then a portion of them can go to the ANSEP program to be able to join that those coursework early. We've had 5 National Merit Scholars come out of AMCS. Again, that senior. We encourage diversity. We are in our district, about 60% of minority students or 40% white. The middle college, we haven't quite, achieved the same equity there, but we're about 50-50 of black and brown students to white students. Very proud of that. And again, over 260 kids this year. We are just happy to have the program, happy for the partnership. It's an opportunity, and it's a way to grow high school, grow students, and grow university, and have kids stay right here at home, which we're really proud of. and I can answer any questions if you'd like.
Questions from the committee? Senator Machicki?
Thank you, Superintendent. I just have you noticed any negative impacts to the sort of high school experience with activities or social interaction due to the program?
So that's a great question. Through the chair to Senator Machicki. What we've done with the AMCS is that our students still have a high school landing, their partner school. And so although they go to AMCS, if I came out of Eagle River High School, I still have an opportunity to graduate with Eagle River High School once my credits are earned, as well as play sports there if they fit into my schedule. I also have a graduation with AMCS at the university level that the university puts on in full regalia. So we really try to have our students with the availability to go into two places. They have a special pass that allows them into their high school dances and proms when we had them. This year is a little different because of the pandemic. But we really try to keep that balance in students' life. Generally, it's utilized quite a bit their junior year, but by senior year, especially the kids who are full-time college students, they are just outside of their sport. They've pretty much moved on, the maturity that it takes. We do still have, just to go further, the availability and allowing some autonomy and direction on our side. Interestingly enough, the first student I had to remove from AMCS actually was probably one of the smartest students. He initially took the tests, and UAA gave him credit for his 111 courses, all 100 courses, because he was just brilliant. He started in level 200 and junior level courses, but he didn't attend classes. He was just smart, but didn't have that work ethic. And so we were afraid, because we transcribed the courses back to high school, that he would fail high school. So we had to talk with his parent and really get him a program that worked for him. So we really do guide these students so that there aren't other negative consequences, because certainly if you fail, I mean, just so you know, half your courses, you're ineligible for FAFSA when you do need it. And so we really want parents and students to go in with their eyes wide open, that it is an opportunity, but they have to do the work on their side.
A question from Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Bishop. It's good to see you. So can you speak to the cost per students as it compares to the students that are attending the traditional high school? And then also, I'm just curious, is there a gathering place or for the students on campus where the 260 or 80 can come together and study and meet and kind of know who else is part of it? And is there an instructor that's kind of for that purpose as well?
Thank you. Through the chair to Senator Hughes, absolutely. I'll start with a gathering place. And in fact, as a legislative grant that was provided about 2012, probably in 2013, there was a legislative grant. The initial first one was in the Eagle River to get campus. It's the only place that I could score a place when we were starting in that Sioux before it grew, the Jack White building there. We received a legislative grant to create kind of a commons area there, and that was missing. But certainly any place on campus that our students go, they have the opportunity, whether it's the library, the coffee shop, on UAA. But we also provide a special place where our teachers are as well. To save money this year, we've placed that at King Tech, which is adjacent to UAA. And we have, so that we can utilize, not necessarily the university didn't charge us for the space, but our teachers that we had in the program for AMCS can now support teaching at King Tech. So we're just aligning our resources and really working with efficiencies. But kids can gather, they study together. Again, they're in college courses, and many times the university professors don't even know which ones are high school kids unless they tell them. But the cost of it is affordable. The reason that it's called the Alaska Middle College School here is because we did create a school. It has its own funding number, and we utilize the support through the BSA. And as you know, Anchorage is the one in the state, so the cost area differential is at the one, so it's the least amount provided by the state of Alaska, because we're the one in the economy. And so Even with the cost area differential, we continue to, we are able to support the kids, not only with their courses, but we pay all their fees. And another large expense that we pay for, that we have money to pay for, is are their books. And that's a major expense at the university level that we're able to pay for. But it pays for itself. It's done well with partnerships. It pays for itself. And in speaking of partnerships, the Lower Yukon opened up their Kulsovec Career Academy here in Anchorage, where they take courses at our King Tech Center for their high school kids. But we did put our first student through the AMCS from the Lower Yukon, and he's doing successfully right here, even during the pandemic this year. So partnerships matter. This is the way the school districts can do it. So whether it's through the Fairbanks School District, Natsu, Kodiak, Valdez, anywhere where there's a campus, if you wanted an on-campus site, you truly can take advantage of that.
Another question from Senator. Yeah,
just a little follow-up. So would you say then if we were to consider lifting that 60 credit cap, it would not be a drain on school districts? You use the word affordable.
Through the chair to Senator Hughes, it would not. Basically, if you for every student that you have that possibly could move on past the 60 credits, you're going to have some students that, like this past year, we had a student who was college ready. That's our goal. But she only completed 9 credit hours because she finally passed all those assessments that you needed to have a college-bearing course, for a credit-bearing course by the last semester. But to us, she's a success story because our goal was to have college-ready kids leave ASD. And so not all kids are going to take 60 right off, so it's absolutely affordable. And those that can move on, we want to support them as well. We do that in our program through K-12. We pay for additional courses. We pay for advanced placement honors as well as special services. So I really believe it meets the needs of students, and that's where our goal should focus. The support should follow the students for their goals.
Are there any other questions before the committee? Seeing none, thank you, Dr. Bishop, for your presentation and answering the questions. And now we shall move on to Dr. Randy Traney, Superintendent, Mat-Su School District. Dr. Traney, if you'd please state your name and your affiliation, put yourself on the record, and begin your presentation. Are you muted? Yeah, we're not hearing anything at this time.
Randy, it's up top on the right, I think.
Still not there.
You have to hover over it to get it to show up.
We have some comments here that you have to hover over it and click on it. Somebody said the top right-hand side? Is this Teams or is this?
Teams. It's frustrating.
I myself struggle with Teams.
Where the leave button is, Randy, can you see it? Up there to the left of that.
Nope, not yet. We would go to an at ease on this, but then nothing would get, no progress would be made because we can't hear them at all during an at ease. Yeah, I think we may have to let that wait for another day. We'll go to a brief at ease, and y'all can, I believe you two, I believe Dr. Bishop and Dr. Traney can hear each other. When we go to an at ease, y'all can continue to work on it for a short period of time. We'll go to a brief at ease. On the record, Dr. Traney, did you make any progress? Someone is, Senator Begich, Doctor of Teams, has a suggestion.
So I've been promoted. So if you hover your cursor over the center of the screen, you should see a bar show up in Teams. There's a bar that shows up, and you'll see a microphone on that bar, and you need to click on that microphone, it'll have an X on it. It's in black and white. It's not like your Zoom, so it's confusing at first. Could you try that? If you're hovering over it, do you see the bar come up?
Using your cursor.
Are you using your cursor to hover over it? It's not working for you?
Well, that's fine.
That was our best shot.
Yeah, I'd encourage you to work on it. I will admit, Teams is a bit clunkier than Zoom, but security is supposedly much greater with Teams. We can get it working. But in the absence of Dr. Traney making his presentation, I'll just say, comment from Senator Machicki.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps Mr. Traney can email you his testimony so that we can read it in case we don't have it available for the next meeting.
We get a thumbs up from Dr. Traney. Sounds great. And I'll tell you, as someone who took a little more than 4 years to get my four-year degree, I think it's a great program. I see the enthusiasm of everybody on board, and I think anything that helps students any semester past 4 years is an unexpected expense, and if these young kids can get ahead of the curve on their 4 years. Senator Hughes.
Yes, and being from that area and when the program first began, there was a little bit of resistance actually at the Matsu College to host it because they didn't know what they'd be dealing with. And since they've had the students at the campus, it's been really a positive thing. It's been wonderful for the students. Families appreciate it. And it's a lot of families who don't have any prior college in the generation of the parents. So we have some newcomers. It's just been really positive. So I'm sure Randy would have given you a lot more information, but I think it's a really good program and is working well on campus.
Comment from Senator Stevens.
So I think one of the reactions I've gotten is that this may be a dumbing down of a university class, and that's simply not the case. These are university accredited. Well, it's under the university accreditation, so they would not dare dumb down a class. So it's the same as a university class. It's often taught on a university campus, or it is taught on a high school campus with a teacher who has a degree in that field. So it's certainly not a dumbing down. It's a legitimate college credit, and I just wish that it had existed when my kids were going to college. It would have saved a year and a half, maybe, of university expenses. So it's a great program. It works well throughout the country. The university's done a great job with it. I think particularly Matsu and Anchorage have done a great job as well. So it's time to do it.
All right, with a comment from Senator Machicki.
Yeah, actually, my experience has been the opposite. I agree with Senator Stevens. I mean, some kids are just ready, and they're prepared. And instead of a dumbing down, high school has to have a certain level of what's available, and some kids are just so ready to go beyond that level. So it's really just an early start for someone who's ready to go there, and I hope to see it expand, if not, certainly not contract over the next few years. So thanks for bringing this bill forward, Senator.
Comment from Senator Hughes.
Yeah, and I appreciate Senator Stevens bringing it forward. I'm curious, would we be the first state to have all districts and make it all available? Would we be a lead, or are there other states that are ahead of us on that?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe so. This idea has been around for a long time. I introduced it, I think, 4 years ago, and then Matsu and Anchorage have been on that for some time. So, no, we would not be the first state, I don't believe.
Okay, well, darn.
All right, with no other comments, we will now set Senate Bill 32 aside. Next, we move to Senate Bill 36 relating to reporting requirements from the University Board of Regents. Senator Stevens, would you like to offer opening remarks and introduce your staff?
Well, certainly. Mr. Chairman, thank you for listening to the bill at this time. This comes out of a really disastrous moment in the University of Alaska's history, where we lost accreditation for our teaching program in Anchorage. It was unknown to everybody. I've talked to the former president. He was not aware that the program was in jeopardy of losing its accreditation. There was a lack of communication throughout the University of Alaska system. My fear is that it could happen in other areas. Universities just do not lose accreditation. And the way accreditation works is that a team is sent to the campus to look at a program, and they make recommendations months and months in advance. They come back months later to see if you've made those changes to improve that program. They make every effort to make sure that changes are made so that you don't lose accreditation. That's why very seldom is accreditation ever lost. It was a shocking thing to me to see CSU lose the UAA School of Education in 2019. What this bill would do is simply require a reporting from the university so that, you know, I believe the university has made changes so that hopefully this would not happen again, but the legislature needs to be involved in this. We need to know. So what this would establish is a reporting to the legislature of how accreditation is going on throughout the University of Alaska system. And specifically, Mr. Chairman, I think there should be a meeting between the education committee in the Senate and the House with the university to make sure that this that we are keeping track of accreditation problems. And so I'd ask Tim Lampkin to go into the bill a little bit more. He's been working on it hard for us.
Mr. Lampkin, would you please place yourself on the record and begin your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. A couple things with this bill. First, I want to mention that the first section of the bill is a result of an unintended consequence. The statute 1440-190A reads that these reports be submitted to the education committees. And when last this bill was introduced, at the time the report was due, there was no education committee yet organized in the other body. And so to avoid that, we've changed the first section of this bill so that the reports are as fairly consistent with other reporting requirements throughout the Blue Books, that the report be submitted instead to the Senate Secretary or the House Chief Clerk. So just so you know, a little bit of housekeeping on that first section. Previous language we had is that these reports would then be presented in quote unquote in person to the education committees, and for obvious practical reasons we've struck that part from the reporting requirement. The new reporting requirement that's really the thrust of this bill regards the status of the university's numerous accredited programs. And again, there's some common vernacular that you're going to be hearing, but in your packet is a summary of the accreditations that the university currently has. It's a bit dated, 2019. I have, as of this morning, received an updated that was published back in August, as Dr. Lair is going to be talking about here shortly. And I did, I think you should have hard copies of that now in your packet as well. It's also been posted online. But this is intended to pretty much fairly align with what the university is currently doing in terms of these reporting components and give a particular attention to accreditation. The goal here is to be preemptive and not reactive. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to go into the sectional.
Please begin.
So as I summarize there, Section 1 amends existing reporting requirements regarding the teacher training and retention to specify that it be submitted to the legislature, not the education committees, biannually by the 30th day of the first session. Section 2 specifies a new report that would currently, as it's written, it's semi-annual, and it would also be submitted to the legislature on the 30th day and then subsequently on or by July 1st of each year. And in fairness, some time has gone by since the unfortunate incident in 2019 about the loss of accreditation, and it's our intent to amend the bill that instead of it being quite that frequent, that it would be a part of the biennial report every other year. That concludes the sectional, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is that the end of your testimony?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
So now we can move on to Dr. Paul Lair, Vice President of Academic Student Research at UA. Dr. Lair, would you once again restate your affiliation and put yourself on the record?
Thank you very much, Senator Holland. For the record, Paul Lair, Vice President for Academic Students and Research at the University of Alaska. Thank you for an opportunity to speak to this proposed legislation. Clearly, the bill would add additional reporting requirements on accreditation at the University of Alaska. Accreditation is obviously the gold standard for our three universities, and I will point out that each of our three universities are separately accredited institutions. There is no system-wide accreditation, and again, it's for our universities and the programs that they offer. It assures that our students and external stakeholders assures our students and external stakeholders that our programs are of high quality and meet or exceed national or industry standards. Just as a preface, there are different kinds of accreditation out there. There is what we call institutional accreditation, sometimes called regional accreditation. And we have accreditation with the Northwest Commission of Colleges and Universities. Each of our three universities are separately accredited and go through separate evaluation by the Northwest Commission. I will point out that Iluksavik College and Alaska Pacific University are also accredited by NWCCU. In addition, and that is a seven-year cycle of accreditation. UAA and UAS had their accreditations reconfirmed in 2019, and UAF underwent its seven-year review this last fall, and we received a letter in February reaffirming our accreditation with Northwest. And actually, the university got several commendations for the quality of their accreditation visit and report. And these reports are available on our websites. They're rather long documents that outline our progress. Accreditation at this institutional level is an ongoing process. And this year, as part of that accreditation, UAA and UAS revisited their mission statements and have modified their mission statements and are doing strategic planning. UAF will start that next year as part of their seven-year cycle. In addition to this institutional accreditation, which also impacts most of the programs, individual programs and majors that we offer, they're part of the cycle. And I should actually say, as part of Northwest requirements, they require that we do periodic program assessment. We look at each of our academic programs on a five-year cycle to see whether they meet student learning outcomes and to make recommendations on those programs. And so that's part of the requirements of the Northwest Commission. In addition to that, several professional groups have program accreditation, and we have over 90 programs or majors across our university system that receive this special accreditation or certification. And this is for engineering programs. It's from the Accreditation Board of Engineering and Technology, or ABET. For business programs at Fairbanks and Anchorage, Associated Advanced Colleges Schools of Business, or AACSB. Education programs, it's the Council for Accreditation of Education Programs, or CAPE. And we have nurses as well, and many other programs receive these accreditations. So the report that we provided to you from 2019 was just a summary, a list of all of the different programs across our institutions and their education status. What I provided to Mr. Lampkin this morning was a report that we are required to provide to the Board of Regents at their September meeting, or for their September meeting, on the status of it, of accreditation. And as a result of the situation with the UAA School of Education, the board stepped up its expectation of reporting to not just simply report the timelines and schedules for accreditation, but to really provide the board information on the status and red flags, if you will, of concerns for programs going forward. The accreditation loss by the UAA initial licensure programs was, in my mind, was, as far as I know, pretty much unprecedented. It's never happened in the history of the University of Alaska system. We've been accredited since 1934, and I've never heard of programs in that case. It was sort of what I expect to be a one-time event, and the board has taken steps to hold the universities accountable for their accreditation. So in addition to the annual report that we provide to the board, we do quarterly reports, oral reports to the board's Committee on Academic and Student Affairs on any concerns or red flags or status of accreditations going forward as well. The board looks at it very seriously. This is their responsibility to look at accreditation and to handle those concerns. So, again, I think for our standpoint, we do provide annual updates to the board, and we're happy. Those are public documents. They are available on the board's website as part of their meeting minutes, and we are happy to provide those to the legislature if those would fulfill your expectations for oversight. But clearly, accreditation is something that we all take very seriously. We are very proud of our accreditations. They factor into our national rankings. They factor into our recruiting. And it's something that we definitely value. And having a strong relationship with NWCCU is a major part of that. So with that, I will be happy to answer questions. Thank you.
Are there any questions from the committee? Senator Michicki.
Thank you. Looking at the list that was provided as backup material, it looks like there were four or five programs that were revoked in the education department: early childhood ed, early childhood special education, education, secondary English, math, science, social studies, elementary ed, and special education. The question I have is, it says under a couple of them that the advanced preparation tracks not affected. What does that mean?
So, thank you. Through the chair, Senator Michicki, at UAA, when KATE, which is the accrediting organization for teacher education, reviewed UAA programs in 2018, leading up to the 2019 decisions, they only reviewed half of the UAA programs, only those involved in initial licensure. And so the bachelor's in elementary ed and secondary ed and special education, et cetera, and early childhood. Whereas the other programs that were intended for secondary licensure and for teachers coming back, they were not affected by that accreditation review. Those programs are currently undergoing accreditation review from KATE, and that process is going forward. We are getting positive feedback from KATE that those programs are looking very strong, but you are correct that the impact was only to a part of the UAA programs in the School of Education. So, I think that is where we are going. So they're ongoing accreditation reviews.
A follow-up from Senator Michicki.
Yeah, thank you very much. Just on a follow-up, what is the status of the loss of accreditation, and how does the process work for returning to that status?
Thank you very much. Through the chair, Senator Michicki. Right now, we are working with each of the three universities, as well as with the board, to look at the prospects of bringing back those programs. The big challenge is that the State Board of Education was requiring that students to get licensure in the state of Alaska were required to graduate from a CAPE-accredited program or CAPE-approved program. With the loss of that accreditation, it was difficult to see how students who graduated from a non-accredited program would meet that standard. Since that time, we have been working with the State Board of Education to relax that requirement, especially in this emergency time with COVID. And so we are looking at abilities to redevelop those programs going forward. So we're working with the faculty at UAA to look at their early childhood programs. They still have an associate's degree in early childhood education. And whether that can be re-expanded. We are also working with the three universities are working together to develop pathways for students in the South Central region to start an associate's degree in education and get a CAPE accredited degree from UA Southeast or University of Alaska Fairbanks as a method for getting licensure in the state of Alaska.
Thank you, Dr. Lehrer. A question from Dr. Stevens? Senator Stevens?
In another life. I do think the university has done a great job in finding these pathways and working with the Southeastern and Fairbanks. So I don't think the students are badly affected. They've been able to move forward on it. But I do still think that it's and as Dr. Laird said, this is unprecedented, and I suspect the only time in his professional career where he has been in an institution that's lost his accreditation. But I think it's really important that we do learn what those red flags are, that we do learn as a legislature what's going on, So I think it's really important that we be a part of that process. Certainly the regions are the most important part of the process. They're the ones that have to make sure that accreditation is maintained. But just for us to know what's going on, to have that annual report sent to us, but even more important, whoever is chair of education committee, I think needs to have a face-to-face with the regions on a biannual basis to learn the process.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. And with no other questions before the committee, thank you, Dr. Lair, for your testimony. Thank you, Mr. Lampkin, for yours. We will now set SB 36 aside. And that is, I think we've wrapped up the business for today. Our next meeting is Wednesday, March 10th at 9 a.m. Is there any other business for the committee? Seeing none, unusually enough, we're wrapped up. We're adjourned at 10:08.